I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. Lorna Jackson was raised in Vancouver and is an assistant professor in the Department of Writing at the University of Victoria before pursuing academics at UVic. She traveled throughout British Columbia as a musician. While she teaches, she has published a new book, Cold Cocked on Hockey, published by Biblioasis. The book retails for $19.95. It's described as the first book-length appreciation of NHL hockey written by a woman that looks at hockey through the eyes of a mother and a daughter, a fan and a player, some of the roles inhabited by Ms. Jackson, who joins me now. It is an energetic, stylish, brash, witty, and biting book written in much the same style. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Lorna Jackson. Good morning, Ms. Jackson.
Hi, Joe.
Thanks for joining us. The publicity around the book says that it's the first appreciation of hockey written by a woman. How accurate is that? There haven't been any books about hockey by women before?
It was accurate, I think, when we were thinking about selling the book, but I think in the meantime I've met Lisa Olven from Vancouver, who has also written an appreciation, but hers is more from an outsider's perspective. It's a real fan appreciation, whereas mine is looking at the game a little bit from the inside, from the locker room as well. So it's approximately accurate, let's put it that way. But when I was researching the book, there were no books that I found written by females, anyway, about the NHL in particular.
It's sort of, I guess, a novelty then that a woman has written a book about hockey. But beyond that, because it seems to me, and I think you write in the book that it's a sort of gritty book, but you wanted it to be gritty because you didn't want it to be a girly book.
Well, not having a model to work from, or sort of the permission of another woman's perspective on the game to work from and sort of play off of, it caused me some stress there, right? I had to find a way to discuss the game. Well, for one, I was surprised that there weren't other books by women. Why would that be? You know, if women fans, as we're told, make up sort of 40% of the ticket base, why wasn't there another book written by a woman? And why was the conversation so slanted toward men, both as fans and commentators and broadcasters as well? So it was difficult finding a perspective, finding a voice, finding a way into the conversation that didn't, and that gave me some credibility as well as a commentator when there wasn't one before.
When did you first encounter hockey? I guess your father had an influence in that.
Yeah, I think like a lot of young women, 12, 13, I looked forward to Saturday nights in the den with my dad after a long week of him working and not seeing much of him. And so he was a Habs fan, I was a Bruins fan, and so a lot of our relationship happened on those Saturday nights watching hockey and other sports as well, but hockey in particular was where I found the characters of Derek Sanderson and Bobby Orr and him with his Jean Beliveau infatuation, and so that's where the best parts of our relationship, I think, were founded.
Was your mom a hockey fan? Is your mom a hockey fan?
She's tolerant, I think. She's a sports fan. I don't think hockey was her favorite game. I think she's more a baseball fan and a football fan. I think she was just kind of more tolerant of hockey and still is.
Have you played hockey much yourself?
I haven't, and the book talks about why. A knee injury when I was about 12 limited my ability to play most sports. I was a volleyball player, but that was about it.
Your daughter's a hockey fan, correct?
She was a huge hockey fan until Ed Jovanovski left the Canucks, and now her heart is so broken that she's going to have to find another way back to the game.
Talk to me about passing that love of hockey that you had to your daughter. Was that something that you instinctively did, or is that something she just picked up on growing up?
Well, I think it's part of, that was a kind of a byproduct of writing the book that I didn't expect, and it was a neat thing that happened, where I was looking at my relationship with my dad as a teenager, thinking about being a teenager and being 15, at the same time that Lily was 15, and invited her to come to some of the games in Vancouver with me to try to get her perspective, also because she's great company. And so being able to see myself through her again gave me yet another angle on the game. And when she puts on her Ed Jovanovski jersey, I got to sort of meditate on what that meant. I had my Bobby Orr jersey when I was her age and had forgotten what that felt like and what what that brought to the game for a teenage girl, you know, where a teenage girl can fit into the game these days. So it was pretty neat. It was, we had a lot of fun at a time when, you know, 15 is not always an easy age for a teenage girl to communicate with her mother, and it was a good time for us.
I'm not a hockey fan, but you come to appreciate it living in Vancouver as I do, and you realize how much a part it is of people's lives here. You live on the island. Is what goes on with the Canucks season after season, is that much a part of their lives as well? Do you find that going down the street that people want to know if you saw the game last night and stuff like that?
Absolutely, and especially this week when training camp has been over here, I think it surprised a lot of people how huge the game is, how much of our imagination the players sort of take up. My students were talking about which bars they'd been to on Saturday night and which Canucks they'd seen, who was in the hot tub with them at Bear Mountain Resort. But more than that, we've got the Salmon Kings now, who are affiliated with the Canucks formally. And a lot of local players on the Salmon Kings and the Victoria Grizzlies as well. And, you know, at my daughter's high school, there's a hockey sort of academy now. And we've always had the Courtnalls and other players sort of hanging out. But I think Victoria is as passionate as Vancouver is. We just don't get to go to the big games, and the schedule doesn't let us come over just for the afternoon to enjoy a game. But I think that in part was why I didn't, much like the jersey change that put Vancouver on the front of the new jerseys, I thought that was a little disrespectful to the rest of the province that is as passionate about the game as Vancouverites are.
And you write in the book about Vancouver being a hockey town. We often hear that Calgary's a hockey town, or Toronto, or mostly Toronto, but you argue that Vancouver is just as much as they are.
Well, and that's another conversation I think we get left out of, mostly because of the media in Ontario that is sort of the dominant voice of the NHL, or we've allowed it to be. We're told over and over again that Toronto and Montreal and Ottawa are the hockey hotbeds, and as someone who grew up in Vancouver, I don't buy that. I don't think the players buy that, and I don't understand where that logic comes from when, starting in 1970, we've had an NHL team, and our fans are passionate, our players are great. And also, that goes along with another myth of hockey and why Canadians love hockey more than any other nation. We're told that it's because it has to do with climate, that we grow up in a country that is cold and icy all the time. Well, on the West Coast, that's not true. And yet we have amazing players come out of British Columbia, Joe Sakic, Paul Kariya, as well as many of the young guys on the junior team that we just watched during the Super Series. I don't understand how that myth sort of came to be that excludes the West Coast from the myth of hockey or the identity of hockey, I guess.
Has the identity of hockey excluded women? You mentioned earlier that women fans make up 40% of the fan base, yet the NHL, to me, hasn't done very much in terms of marketing it to women. What do you think it should do then?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not a marketer. I think really smart people are, and I'm not sure why the NHL has decided the only way to sort of appeal to women is to give them pink replica jerseys and call that, you know, an attempt at bringing them into the game. As far as I can tell, other sports have done a better job at that. The CFL has got Football 101, for example, where they invite women to hang out with the team and learn some stuff about the game and so on. It could be that female hockey fans are a little more knowledgeable than that anyway. But it may be more the presentation of the game and how it's depicted through media, through broadcast, that seems to focus on the statistics, the masculinity of the game. That doesn't seem to account for maybe the other ways that women read the game. I think women, generalizing about anything is a bad idea, especially about women probably. But I think women see players in a much more complicated way than maybe a male fan does. We look at someone like Trevor Linden, not just as a great player and history than a storied player, but as a human being and a person that we admire.
Talk to me about the title of the book, because this builds into how the game is marketed in terms of violence. Cold Cocked on Hockey. Who came up with the title, and what does it mean? And where does it come from, I guess, is the question.
A friend sort of threw me that title after we'd been talking about Todd Bertuzzi and the idea of cold cocking, which is to surprise someone with a punch and knock them out. I liked the sound of the word. Bertuzzi is a big part of that book, and the narrative of the Canucks 03-04 season became much more interesting to me around that incident. So the title fit with Bertuzzi and with that punch to Steve Moore. It also was how I felt about hockey again in 2002. The punch that felled me and made me swoon came out of nowhere. I fell in love with the game so quickly after the Olympics. So it worked that way. And there's also sort of a little narrative of the aging female in the book, so it's cold cocked is a bit of a joke and a pun on what happens to a woman in her 50s and how she becomes ignored.
But the violence in the game, and the Bertuzzi thing brought that to the fore, whether it was too violent or and was this how they were marketing the game. Yeah. Do you think that what happened there in that season, like, what is that, you said 03, 04? Or, did that change the game at all?
Well, I make a distinction between fighting and violence, for one, and I think sometimes we forget that there's a difference, that the fighting in hockey is arguably part of the game. What happened with Bertuzzi was violence. It wasn't a fight. It was something quite different. And I argue in the book, too, that there are other forms of violence in the game that diminish the game and that diminish my enjoyment of the game and should. Headshots, for example, and the dirtier aspects of the game. I think the NHL is still struggling with how to market or ignore that part of the game. And it seems to me that they've been so flirting with the American audience and trying to find a good way to flirt with them that will consummate with big markets and big money, that they've tried everything. And the Don Cherry Rock'em Sock'em version of hockey is one that they've tried, thinking that that would appeal to a larger American audience.
And that hasn't worked?
I don't think it's worked. I think it's a simplistic way of treating fans. I think it's a simplistic way of looking at the game, and I don't think it's realistic to think that American fans, hockey fans, are going to appeal to them so much that they're going to watch the game just for that.
So the idea that hockey is violent is something that you don't buy?
Oh, I do. I think it's a very violent game. I think it's an aggressive game, and that at its best, it's a controlled aggressive game. And I think a fighting in the game is part of that control as well. I'm just saying I think that not every fan does the other kind of violence, the menace and the rage that happens and the retribution and those kinds of things. I don't think for every fan that's a particularly appealing part of the game. I think it's always interesting.
You, obviously, in terms of being a hockey fan, you've come to appreciate, and you're a professor of writing at UVic, sports writing. Mm-hmm. And we seem to discount that as merely recapping the scores and what happened in the game. But there are some really great sports writers in this country, and hockey writers as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, and that's definitely one of my motivations for writing the book, was to explore the sports writing form. Because, like you, I love sports writing, and there are a number of great sports writers in our country and in the States too, and elsewhere. Dave Bedini's not only his hockey books, but his Baseballissimo on baseball. John McPhee in the States, and among others. But again, there weren't that many female writers for me to model on. I like Joyce Carol Oates' on boxing and A.L. Kennedy's on bullfighting. And both books took sports writing into kind of a different realm, that more meditative and philosophical and also knowledgeable and sort of gritty as well. And I really wanted to look at that with this book, to try to figure out more ways of using sports writing and honoring the great sports writers that, that appeal to me as well.
And do you find that, that sports fans appreciate the writing a great deal more, perhaps in recent years than before?
I think there's a, I think, again, to generalize about anybody isn't wise, and I think sports fans are such a diverse group of human beings, and male sports fans too. I think a lot of sports fans are intellectual, they are thinking people, readers, thinkers, and I think publishers maybe simplify or who that audience might be, and think that, you know, the cliche is that men don't read books and women don't read books about sports, but I'm not finding that to be the case.
I find that myself. We have authors on regularly, and I'm finding more sports books come out every season than previous.
Well, it might be because, I don't know why that might be.
It just seems to me on a general level that there seems to be a market for them.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. but I hope too that we're pushing the form, and this is the teacher in me talking as well. I hope we're going somewhere new with sports writing and trying to make it do a little bit more than just, as you say, the statistics and the who won, who lost, and the sports bios that really don't give us much much to chew on other than numbers.
And you spent some time in the locker room with players.
I did.
While writing this book. Was that hard to arrange, or is it pretty much the norm now for female journalists and so on, sports writers, to be in the locker room now?
Both. It is the norm, although when I was there, I was the only one in the room, the only female in the room. It was difficult to arrange because I'm not a beat reporter, I'm not a newspaper writer, I'm not affiliated with the newspaper. I am a writer and a critic, and as you say, I teach at a university. That, I think, through the grace of Chris Bremwell, who was the media relations dude at the time, got me into the room. I don't think I had the access that probably a newspaper writer would have, and it was frustrating for me to get that access, and it was in accordance with what the NHL allows, which is half an hour in the room after practice or after a game. And it was intimidating for that reason. There were lots of veteran sports writers and sportscasters in that room, bless them. I was pretty intimidated being there with them, and yet it was exhilarating for me as well. I had a great time there. The players were wonderful and forthcoming. Guys like Brad May and Trevor Linden were wonderful to talk to. It was scary.
Well, what are you working on now? I was on your website, LornaJackson.com, and I did notice that you're working on another book, and it seems pretty interesting. Would you tell us about that?
Yeah, I've been working on it for a couple of years, actually in tandem with the hockey book, and there are crossovers between them. This is a collection of what we're calling short fictions. They're stories that take the form of interviews with famous people, celebrity people, but the character of the interviewer is... that's the main character of each one, and she's an interviewer who doesn't seem to be able to shut up about herself, so her life story gets told at the same time as she's interviewing these people under extraordinary circumstances. She interview Marcus Naslund kayaking in the Strait of Juan de Fuca, a wholly fictional arrangement. Michael Andaje is interviewed at a dog show and so on. So they're, again, pushing the short story form a little bit further than it's been before, I think, at least for me. They were great fun to work on. That book, I think, should be coming out in the spring as well.
It sounds very interesting, but until then, we will read Cold Cocked on Hockey. Lorna, thanks so much for joining us today, and continued good luck with the book.
Thank you very much, Joe.
Lorna Jackson is the author of Cold Cocked on Hockey, 1995, from Biblioasis. I'm Joseph Planta.